Welcome to It's About Time. I'm your host, Deborah Krumholtz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dix McComas. Today, our guest is John DeGraff, co-producer of the new documentary film, The Motherhood Manifesto. This film explores what it means to be a working mother in the United States today and shows dramatically just how far behind all the other industrial countries we've fallen. John is the national coordinator of Take Back Your Time, a national initiative challenging overwork, overscheduling, and time urgency, and he's a frequent speaker on issues of overwork and overconsumption. He's worked as an independent producer of documentaries at PBS in Seattle for the past 23 years. He's the recipient of more than 100 awards for filmmaking and produced the popular PBS specials Running Out of Time, An Examination of Overwork and Time Pressure in America, and Affluenza, A Critique of American Consumerism. And I'm sure we could go on and on, but we'll stop there. So thanks so much for talking to us today, John.
My pleasure.
So we're going to start by asking you just to tell us a little bit about what the issues are that you're addressing here.
Sure, you bet. The Motherhood Manifesto is the film version of a book by the same name written by Joan Blades, who's the co-founder of the activist organization MoveOn.org, and Kristen Rao Finkbeiner, who's been a feminist writer for some years. The film and the book examine several aspects of the situation for mothers in the United States and how far we really have fallen behind other industrial countries. So we look at, for example, direct discrimination against mothers, how in more than half the states in the country, it's still legal to ask people their marital status, how many kids they have, and to deny them jobs on that basis. Many states have outlawed this, but in 27 states, it's still legal to do that. Then we look at maternity and paternity leave, childbirth leave, which the United States, along with only three other countries in the world, Papua New Guinea, Lesotho, and Swaziland, those are the only four countries in the entire world that don't guarantee some kind of paid childbirth leave when a person has or adopts a child. We then look at issues of flexibility in work and part-time work and what other countries are doing to make it possible for people to work part-time and still earn a decent salary and get decent benefits. We look at after-school programs for kids and the need for those. We look at health care for children and advocate universal health care, at least for kids, as an expansion of Medicare, is something we could also do at very little cost. And right now we have 9 million American children who have no health insurance. We then look at child care around the country and the need for some kind of universal child care program, which virtually every other industrial country has for its kids. And finally, we look at living wages and the fact that the minimum wage in this country has not been increased for 10 years and now is worth only about half in real terms as much as it was in 1968.
One of the questions that Deborah and I both had as we watched the documentary was we both wondered how it was that the United States fell so far behind. I mean, we've used that phrase, the United States has fallen behind. Was there a time in recent history when the United States was more on par with other industrialized countries in terms of all of the issues you've just listed?
Well, I would say so. And some of the things, no. Certainly in terms of maternity leave, many of the European countries, the first paid maternity leave guarantees were in Germany in 1871 under Bismarck. Mm-hmm. So that goes back way, way back. And most of the Western European countries had paid maternity leave guarantees by the early 1900s. So in that sense, we've never been up there. But in terms of things like minimum wage, in terms of many of the other issues, health care, up through the 60s, the U.S. was pretty similar to most of the Western European countries. We've fallen behind really, especially since 1970.
One of the points made in the documentary was that some kind of social package was put together and passed by both the House and the Senate in, I think, 1973, and then Richard Nixon
sure,
vetoed
that.
Sure,
a universal child care program that would have provided basically universal preschool to all children in the United States. And it was passed by both houses of Congress. Of course, the Congress then was democratically controlled, and it was vetoed by Richard Nixon. But it does suggest that the interest was there. Certainly at that time, the recognition was very, very clear that moms were going into the workplace in massive numbers and that they needed help. And the Congress was more willing to do that. And in recent years, that just has not been the case. President Bush starts our film out by stating just that two-thirds of all moms also work outside the home today. And the president says that government should take their side, making it possible for them to have a home life and a rewarding career. But in fact, the government has done anything but take mother's side. It's put up more and more obstacles, made it harder and harder for moms to have a rewarding career and still have some time for their families.
So why did you feel like now was the time to make this film?
Well, it wasn't so much that I felt that now was the time. I think Joan Blades felt that now was the time to write this book. And then she asked me to work with her to create a film version of the book. So it's not so much that. I did the film because Joan came to me with the idea and asked me to do it. But I do think it is timely. I think it's absolutely the right time for this message to get out because the problem is not going away. In fact, it's getting worse, and we are falling further and further behind other countries. And also, I think the way the political life of the country is right now, I think people throughout the country are looking for some new ideas because the polarization that we see in political life today, all of these kinds of things are leaving a pretty sour taste in most people's mouths. And I think this issue of real family values, of providing families with the help and mothers with the help that they need to raise their children and raise them well, is something that cuts across the political lines and gives us a chance to move beyond polarization.
That's interesting because one thing we were talking about in thinking about speaking with you is that a lot of people that we know would agree with all these issues, and those are the people that would probably be coming to our, you know, house parties. And we could talk about that in a minute, your plan for house parties. But how do you think that this film is able to reach across to other groups?
I think amazingly so. For example, I think that by the time the film is absolutely in finished form for the house parties, we're still doing a little bit of changes to the version that you've seen. It will include the communications director of the Christian Coalition, who has endorsed the film, says she loves the film, and is promoting the film. I think at last count there were roughly 30 organizations, or maybe more, that are involved in this campaign called Moms Rising. And Moms Rising, you can find that at momsrising.org on the web, is the creation of Joan Blades and Kristen Ralph Finkbeiner. It's a new organization to promote these very issues that has come out of the Motherhood Manifesto book and the project. Moms Rising now has member organizations that are probably number well over 30 at this point. And those include unions, they include the National Organization for Women, they include various kinds of organizations, the National Partnership for Women and Families, for example, that are working on these issues and that plan to use the film to get their members in the fall, probably mid to late September, to hold house parties with the video all over the country and encourage for people to encourage their friends and neighbors to come and then to be given some kinds of direct action that they can do as a result of that. Some bills that may be out there, talking to their representatives and senators, trying to also get some of these issues talked about in the 2006 midterm elections.
Do you feel hopeful about that, that there is going to be more discussion about these issues in this upcoming election?
I do feel hopeful. I mean, it's going to take some time, but, you know, if candidates of both parties are smart about this, I think they will start thinking and talking about this, because both the major pollsters for both parties, in the film we have Frank Luntz, who is George Bush's pollster. He's the leading Republican pollster. Frank Luntz says that free time and these things, the kind of issues that are talked about in the film, is the number one issue for working mothers as a result of his polling, that they care about this more than anything else. Now, Celinda Lake, who is the leading pollster for the Democrats, now believes exactly the same thing. She's written a book called What Mothers Really Want. She says time is the big issue. This is what they want, and that the candidates need to start talking about these things and responding. So when you've got the two biggest pollsters in the country for both parties saying this is an issue for candidates to pay attention to, I think that's going to happen. Now, in the case of Luntz, he's often said that you don't necessarily have to offer any programs or any mandates. You just have to let people know that you're aware of that they have this problem and that you care about it. And I think that's why we saw Bush saying things about this but not really doing anything about it. I think because ideologically it is harder for the Republicans to support these things. Not impossible, but harder. Whereas I think the Democrats, it's a little bit easier to say, there's a role for government here.
Right.
John, Deb and I both were really interested as we watched your documentary. We just started talking about but we had seen several documentaries in recent years with political agendas. The movies of Michael Moore came to mind,
sure,
especially
Greenwald, and sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then now Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth.
Sure.
So I'm not sure what my question is, but we were just interested in why do you believe you have a long history of making documentaries? Why is it that people, or at least now we're seeing all of these documentaries? Does it say something about the quality of news that people are getting elsewhere, or are documentaries doing the work that books once did, or newspapers, or any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm no expert on that. I think, though, you're kind of hitting on the head that there are probably several reasons for this. I think one of them is that the news media doesn't do a very good job, that there are lots of people out there who are dissatisfied with the trends toward infotainment in the news today and in television today, and who are really looking for something different. It's hard to explain the response that some of the films, I mean, part of it comes from, I think, those kind of good reasons. Part of it probably also comes just from the polarization in the country, and that unfortunately there's too much of this where people really kind of like to just cheer their own side on, and so you get, as much as I respect Michael Moore, he's making films that are clearly for the converted, and
right.
We did try to make a film that isn't that way, that really does include representatives of, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, that includes conservatives and liberals, and it's got a point of view, and I'd say that the point of view leans toward the liberal, but I don't think it's a hit you over the head with an axe kind of program, and I think one thing that indicates that is that the leader of the Christian Coalition could look at the film and say, I like this film. I think it's an important film. I think that's also true of Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, which is a terrific film and is, I think, really persuading a lot of people who are not part of the converted.
Did, as you your co-producer began, this was a concern and something that was important to you from the outset?
That this would speak to a broader audience?
Yes, to speak to
absolutely.
A broader audience.
Yes, and it, not only us, but Joan Blades, MoveOn is sort of seen as an intensely partisan organization, I think, but its founders, Joan Blades and Wes Boyd, are anything but. Joan is actually a mediation attorney. That's her practice. Mm-hmm. She's very interested in bringing people together of diverse viewpoints and working things out, and so she's been having these kinds of meetings with people on the right, and very cordial meetings. You know, obviously they're not going to agree on everything, and when it comes to certain things like abortion and gay rights, I'm sure she and the Christian Coalition people are 180 degrees apart. But they are finding that on these issues, these issues of women and families and what we can do to help families, that they've got a lot more agreement than disagreement.
It really is shocking, even to someone who thinks they know a lot about these issues, to see what we do in this country or what we don't do for our families. And, yeah, it's just, it's an amazing disappointment.
Yeah. John,
well, I've had people even from other countries. I mean, there was a woman from India who watched this film and came to me and she said, I had no idea. I am absolutely shocked because many of these things we even take for granted in India, you know?
Right, and it does seem like if anybody that sat down and listened to it would agree. It seems like everybody would have to agree. Like, of course we want mothers to be with their babies. Of course we want to support and help families. But yet that's so far from the realities.
Well, one of the things is that these other countries recognize that when we don't do these things, we pay big time as a group in the long run. Now, one of the things that prevents, for instance, paid childbirth leave is that companies feel like, well, you know, I'll get stuck with this cost. It doesn't have to be that way. California now has a paid childbirth leave law, the only state in the country, and that's paid for actually by workers through a very small payroll deduction, not by the businesses. But one of the sense we have is that people look at this from their own individual thing, and they say, well, that's going to cost me. But what we don't recognize is that as a society, we are paying big time later for the cost of not giving parents time to bond with their children.
Right.
We pay for this in poor children's health, in poor children's educational attainment, in juvenile delinquency, in all of these kinds of things. Other countries recognize that it's better to pay this up front,
right,
to give the parents the time to bond and make the kids healthy, and they do well later. But
right,
the U.S. just doesn't think in those terms.
The long term. You know, I was just talking to Dix before saying that when I had my daughter, I thought I was going to stay home for 3 months. And where he asked where I got that number. I don't know. That's what everyone said. That was like the magic number. I guess it's the unpaid family leave is the 12 weeks. And
right.
And then when she was born, it was like, 12 weeks? You've got to be kidding. It just seemed so absurd to me that I could possibly leave her so quickly. And, you know, it was just a...
Well, that is where we differ, too, from so many countries. There's in the film, we have a group of mothers from the Czech Republic who live in Seattle, mm-hmm, and who, if they were in their country, would get 2 years of paid family leave. And so they go back to Prague, and, you know, many of them have stayed out longer with no pay and had no pay anyway, but were managed to maybe get 6 months unpaid off and then go back to work. And they go back to Prague, and their friends say, wow, you know, what a terrible mother you must be to go back to work after 3 months or 6 months, you know, and not be there for your kid. And then in the United States, they talk with their coworkers, and the coworkers are saying, how can you stay out for 3 months or 6 months? You're going to ruin your career.
Mm-hmm.
So it just indicates the huge gap between our thinking and that of people in the rest of the world.
How did Canada calculate what mothers' needs were and extend this, what was 6 months or 3 months, to a year? What happened in that country?
Well, I think they just looked at the numbers and at the evidence of what both what it means to kids to be able to have longer time to bond, and also the cost of providing for child care and things for parents, and they, what the Canadians concluded was that 6 months of paid leave, which was already generous, you know, which they had, should be made 12 months. So now the way the law is in Canada is that moms get to take 15 weeks off paid when they give birth, and this is for the mom only. But then either parent can take they can share an additional 35 weeks to make a full year. And either parent, that's a parental leave, either parent can take that. They can divide that up with dad taking 15 and mom 20, or, you know, any way they want. So they get a total of 50 weeks, and they get 55% of their salary during that period, and that comes basically from unemployment.
Wow, that is amazing. Really enlightened.
Well, now, did the Canadians, was there a huge and fierce political battle over this, or did they look, I mean, are they much more prone to look at the statistics and the, you know, the wisdom of experts and say, my gosh, we'd be crazy not to do this?
I think it's the latter. I don't think there was a huge battle over this. I also think the Canadians are more Eurocentered, that they see what's going on in the rest of the world. They're a small country. They don't see themselves as the center of the universe, and so they look to other places as they make their policy. They look to the United States. They pick and choose what they think is good from the United States, but they also look to Europe and to other places. And I think when they looked at this issue, what was going on in Europe just looked a whole lot more sensible than what they saw in the United States. Now, we have a tendency that we know it all. I mean, you know, we're really pretty uninformed about what goes on in other countries in the world. And, you know, so we don't seek solutions. And really, there are just so many fascinating policies and things going on throughout the world that Americans could learn from.
Right. We have no time to contemplate in this society. Let me ask you, because I know you knew a lot about these general issues before you started this project. Did anything surprise you throughout the process of making the film?
Well, a lot of this stuff I was fairly aware of. I think I just it deepened my understanding of it a great deal. I did know the information about only four countries, including the U.S., not having maternity leave, for example. And when I first found that information, I was just blown away. I think also learning that that 150 countries in the world guaranteed paid sick leave to people when they're sick, that they can take some time off with pay. And the United States is the only industrial country in the world that does not do that. That surprised me. I wasn't familiar with that one. It's an example of really a very short-sighted, I would say stupid, policy, because we have a situation where we are pushing thousands of Americans every day to go to work sick, very sick sometimes. And the result of that is that they get other people sick, they stay sick longer, they tax the medical system more, they decrease productivity, and you know, God knows what will happen if the bird flu hits. I mean, are we going to have people going to work sick because they feel like they've got to do it or they won't get any pay? And it is just shocking to see how unique the United States is. It's not like we're, you know, it's not like half of the industrial countries in the world are like us. It's like nobody else is like us. And in fact, even most of the poor countries in the world do a better job with their limited resources of supporting moms than we do.
In some ways, having those statistics be so dramatic brings the point home even stronger. I mean, naming those other countries that sit with us is dramatic to hear.
It's unbelievable. And people from Europe, when they come here, they're shocked. You know, I mean, there's a lot to like about the United States. There's no question about it. And people like many of the things. But what there's a, sort of a trend that happens, and Europeans will come here and they kind of like the a little bit of the entrepreneurial spirit here initially and things like that. And the idea initially when they're young, they can work real hard and get, you know, material advances and things that they might not be able to achieve in Europe. But as soon as they have a family, they hightail it back to Europe as fast as they can in most cases, because they realize that there is no support for them.
Right.
John, I wanted to ask one other question. In your view, when you talked about, you just said they are attracted to the entrepreneurial kind of atmosphere in America. And this, in my mind, at least, is linked to kind of old-fashioned individualism,
yep,
which is deep runs deep in this country in many ways. And do you see, I mean, do you see this predicament that we've run into in terms of family social policy as kind of a direct, unfortunate byproduct of that?
I think that individualism. I think to a degree it is. Although, you know, America always also had a strong strain of helping each other out. You know, as there was the individualism, but there were also the barn raisings and all the kinds of things where people took care of each other. And from the Great Depression on through the mid-1970s, I think there was a huge sense in the United States, a much greater sense that we're in this together, that we have to try to lift the poor from poverty, that we have to do the kind of things that help all of us as a nation, and the policies that we had reflected that. Now, since the mid-70s, we've gone in a different course. We've chosen what Bush calls the ownership society and what I call the you're-on-your-ownership society, and basically said everybody has out for themselves. We're going to idolize the market. The market is going to be dominant over everything else, and as a result, I think we've seen disastrous consequences. If you look at virtually any quality of life measure, from health to crime to equality, you name it, savings, et cetera, the United States is in a worse position today relative to the other industrial countries than we were in 1970, all the way across the board.
I'd like to thank our guest today, John DeGraff. He's the producer of the new documentary, The Motherhood Manifesto. If you want more information about how you can get a copy of this film, or if you want to find out about hosting a house party, go to momsrising.org. We welcome your comments and story ideas. Email them to itsabouttimeradio@comcast.net. This show has been produced in association with Take Back Your Time.